Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines of the mainstream news. I'm Steve Rendell, here with Peter Hart. This week on Counterspin, campaign coverage is often derided as superficial, but the media performance of this past week takes the cake. Why have a series of unsubstantiated claims about John Kerry's Vietnam service become the defining issue of the presidential race? We'll talk to Brian Montopoli of the Columbia Journalism Review's campaign desk about the Swift Boat controversy. Also on Counterspin, in a look at one of the latest examples of corporate media intolerance for dissenting views, we'll talk to a radio host from Silver City, New Mexico, whose show on station KNFT had offered a little balance to the right-leaning station's other programming. Radio Free Silver host Kyle Johnson will join us to tell us what happened next. All that's coming up, but first we'll take a look back at the week's press.
Sometimes the media can make you forget things you already knew, and in some cases, things they reported in the first place. Consider the recent Pentagon investigation into the abuses at the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. On August 25th, the investigation by a commission selected by Donald Rumsfeld found numerous instances of abuse and violations of international law at the facility. The investigation criticized military officials up the chain of command, all the way to Donald Rumsfeld's office. As the New York Times reported on August 24th, the report found that senior officials were not, quote, exercising sufficient oversight over a confusing array of policies and interrogation practices at detention centers in Cuba, Afghanistan, and Iraq, close quote. That became the dominant line in the media. Not enough oversight, confusing instructions, and so on. But something's missing here. Was the failure at the top really a failure to monitor what was happening at Abu Ghraib? Extensive reporting by outlets such as the New York Times has shown that there were memos and directives issued from the Pentagon and the Justice Department, which encouraged aggressive and possibly illegal interrogation techniques, and also advised that top military and political officials could be exempt from laws regarding the use of torture. References to those early reports are hard to come by, though. A front-page Times article on August 25th, for example, failed to mention any of this until the end of the article, when Reed Brody of Human Rights Watch raised the issue. So did the Pentagon report simply overlook this evidence? Not exactly. As a commentary on the American Prospect website pointed out, page 14 of the report's executive summary finds that the torture of prisoners had been sanctioned by top military officials in Iraq. But the prevailing spin in the media is that Rumsfeld and others simply didn't do enough to stop the bad practices. In reality, earlier reporting showed that they encouraged them. Too bad media outlets like the New York Times are so unwilling to discuss things they reported themselves.
Is the Republican convention getting preferential treatment from ABC News? Well, yes. Not only is ABC News scheduled to give the GOP gathering in New York City more coverage than they gave the Democrats in Boston, it will also give the Republicans more prominent coverage. ABC, like the other networks, will air one primetime hour per night on 3 out of 4 days of the gathering, Tuesday through Thursday. This is similar to the coverage afforded the Democrats' convention when the networks aired an hour of primetime coverage on 3 of its 4 nights, but skipped the night keynote Barack Obama spoke. However, on Monday night of the GOP convention, when the other networks will not be covering it, ABC News will provide a special report on the Republican gathering that will air during the halftime of the network's Monday Night Football broadcast. Since Monday Night Football is one of the most watched shows on television, the extra time adds up to a huge bonus for the Republicans. That liberal media. When will the Republicans ever catch a break?
And finally, right-wing columnist Michelle Malkin is a fixture on talk radio on the Fox News Channel, where her views are unlikely to provoke strenuous questioning. That might explain why she got so bent out of shape after her August 19th appearance on MSNBC's Hardball. Malkin got into hot water by saying there were some questions about one of John Kerry's Vietnam wounds. Quote, there are legitimate questions about whether or not it was a self-inflicted wound, close quote. Chris Matthews immediately wanted clarification on this, since, as he put it, shooting yourself on purpose would be a criminal act. Is that what she meant? Malkin wouldn't say, so Matthews kept going, saying, quote, no one has ever accused him of shooting himself on purpose, close quote. Malkin responded by saying that some of the Swift Boat veterans disagree, quote, yes, some of them say that, close quote. The problem is that they don't. Some members of the group, who can hardly be considered credible to begin with, say Carey may have inadvertently hurt himself, but none suggest he did so on purpose. Nevertheless, Malkin claims she was unfairly attacked by Matthews and his quote-unquote slimeball tactics, appearing on C-SPAN and the Rush Limbaugh show to make her case. But Malkin's not the only one who has a beef with Matthews. According to an item in the August 30th issue of U.S. News & World Report, some GOP insiders think Matthews, who voted for Bush in 2000, is now too critical of the administration, and, quote, as payback, they've stopped urging Republicans to appear on the show. Close quote. The implication, according to U.S. News, is that not too many GOP operatives will be showing up to play hardball during the party's convention. If that means that independent critics and analysts will be on the air instead, that sounds like the kind of convention coverage we'd like to see more of.
Thanks, Peter. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group FAIR. FAIR also publishes a magazine called Extra. We'll be giving subscription information for Extra later on in the show.
You're probably familiar with the controversy over George W. Bush's service in the Texas Air National Guard during the Vietnam War. But instead of missing records and unexplained absences, imagine this scenario. Official documents all backed up Bush's side, and numerous veterans who served with him vouched for his story. Then imagine a group came along to challenge all of that, only they didn't directly serve with Bush and had no documentary evidence to back up their claims. How much media attention would that get? Very little, one would think. But the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth have managed to dominate media coverage of the presidential race by raising unfounded charges against John Kerry and his Vietnam service. How did this happen? We're joined now by someone who's been watching this all very closely. Brian Montopoli is a reporter for Campaign Desk, a project of the Columbia Journalism Review. He joins us now in the studio. Brian Montopoli, welcome to Counterspin.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we're going to set aside the issue of whether the charges made by the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth are credible. The evidence doesn't support their case. But that doesn't seem to affect the media attention paid to the group. Let's go back to the beginning in the most recent piece you co-authored for Campaign Desk. You look back to when the group first arrived on the political scene. Set the stage. Tell us about when that was and what the media reaction was back then.
Well, that was back in May. The Swift Boat Veterans held a press conference where they essentially announced, we're going to go after John Kerry for lying about his service. And the press didn't really bite. There was one report on the major networks, and there was a little discussion on Hannity and Combs and all that, but sort of the story went to bed. And the media, rightfully, I think, at the time, just sort of wrote them off as a group that didn't have a tremendous amount of credibility and moved on. And for the next 2 months, you really didn't hear much about them.
Well, let's fast forward those 2 months. Obviously, things are much different now. Your article on CampaignDesk.org makes this point, and I'll just quote from it. The Swift Boat Veterans for Truth may have put themselves in the game, but it's a flawed media that made them stars. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, there's so many reasons for this. One of the big ones that bothered us quite a bit is the fact that, as you said, the vast majority of evidence supporting Kerry, so often the media feels that it's not their job to act as filters. They feel like they're just there to be a sounding board. There's one side, there's another side. We're going to present the two sides and then just sort of go from there. So you'll have one of the Swift Boat guys, John O'Neill, and then you'll have someone from the Kerry campaign, and they'll be debating the merits. And at no time, you know, they'll do this on a cable show, and at no time will anyone say, well, the records support Kerry. Well, all the eyewitnesses support Kerry. Well, you weren't there. Well, you said this about Cambodia, and then you said this about Cambodia, and those are inconsistent. You'll just have people sort of nodding and smiling and going along with both sides spin, as though we're not talking about truth. We're talking about just sort of two people arguing. It's infuriating. I mean, it gets to a point where you just want to say, look, just tell us what happened. I mean, you're a news station. I'm obviously talking more about television right now. Your job is to filter the truth for us. And obviously, without bias, your bias should merely be towards the truth. And it wasn't, which is a large part of the reason why this story happened. I can go on for a while here, and I will if you want me to, about other instances.
Well, it seems like you mentioned this tendency, it might be kind of false objectivity, this tendency not to fact check any of the things that are coming along. What else do you think is at work in this media environment where things can't be called what they are?
There's a couple things. I mean, the media had an interest in this story in part because of when it came about. It was August. There wasn't a lot going on in terms of political news. CNN doesn't really want to talk about the economy, I don't think, or Kerry's health care plan. I don't think it's terribly good at reeling in viewers. They didn't really – nothing had happened with terrorism that was that notable. People continue to die in Iraq, but that seems to no longer be much of a story. So there was this big sort of gap. And the other thing about the SWIFTFO veterans is they had such a sort of – there was such a propensity for conflict. I mean, you had these two sides. There was sort of blood in the water, so to speak. And it was just very easy for this story to be painted as sort of this back and forth, conflict, ratings driven. The other thing that I think has gotten missed about this is someone from the New York Times, Allison Mitchell, the deputy national editor, said told editor and publisher that she's not sure that in an era of no cable television we would have even looked at this. This is something that we talked about a little bit. The people we dubbed the Carnival Barkers, this is on radio, some of the people on television, who really drove this story. And it's interesting to think that sort of some of the lowest common denominator media outlets are the ones who have really made this into a story. Sort of a sad comment on the state of journalism.
Mm-hmm. They're certainly the ones that made the story, but the story has been carried throughout the mainstream media, so much so that when John Kerry announced that he was going to hold a press conference and talk about the other issues that were important in the campaign, try to move coverage away from the Swift Boat veterans, you had a report on ABC World News Tonight where Dan Harris says, essentially, John Kerry's the one who raised Vietnam in the first place, so he can't walk away from this. This idea that because you raise an issue, anything can go at that point. What do you make of that justification?
It's astounding. I mean, the notion that Kerry certainly did make Vietnam an issue, and within sort of a rational discussion, I think it makes sense for people to be able to talk about Vietnam and his service. But talking about an issue should not open you up to having people lie about the issue. And the you're seeing all over the place Democrats are fretting. You see it in editorials around the nation. Well, if John Kerry didn't want to be attacked by the veterans, he shouldn't have made Vietnam an issue. That is an absurd line. And the worst part is that's a line that's not just coming from Rush Limbaugh. That's a line that's coming in the Washington Post. This notion and the fact that people miss this I don't think terribly nuanced point is I keep saying astounding here, but the Swift Boat veterans issue sort of gets me thinking that way. I mean, the media has to understand that just merely talking about an issue shouldn't open you up to any sort of lie. I mean, you can't make anything up about George Bush just because he talks about it. Shouldn't be able to make anything up about John Kerry just because he brings up Vietnam.
Are there analogies you can think of that you could raise to kind of compare how the media covered something that might relate to George W. Bush? We mentioned at the top the National Guard service, imagining this world where all the documents supported Bush, and yet a group of partisan Democrats came along and said, well, you know, I didn't serve with Bush, but he wasn't there. That you can't imagine getting much media play. Are there other examples you can think of where the standards were very different?
Well, back in 99, there was a book that came out that essentially talked a lot about George Bush and cocaine use and all of these things that were not completely implausible, but certainly somewhat salacious. And the book came from an author that didn't have a tremendous amount of credibility. And the media essentially ignored it. And this guy ended up – the Bush campaign threatened him with libel. This guy ended up going away. The story went away. He ended up killing himself in the end. And ultimately, the media did its job there. I mean – Bush did not deserve to have that come out in the way it would have come out in an unsupported way. And yet you've got people like Britt Hume saying this is an example of liberal media bias because we're criticizing the Swift Boat veterans. We shouldn't be talking about the Swift Boat veterans. I mean the media has a lot of – there's a lot of voices out there saying a lot of ridiculous things on both sides. And the media has a responsibility to figure out which ones are credible and which ones aren't and talk about the credible ones and not talk about the non-credible ones. And in the case of the Swift Boats, they seem to have somehow, with a tiny media buy in three states for $500,000, seem to have slipped through here and become a major story.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is one phenomenon you see in the coverage where journalists are now trying to find reasonable comparisons to the Swift Boat to try to show that this is happening on both sides of the political aisle. So they say, well, you've got the Swift Boat veterans on this side, but you also have Move On and Media Fund on this side. What do you make of that comparison between the different sides?
Well, again, it's sort of the same issue as talking about Kerry bringing it up and then that being a lie. I mean, to compare all of the 527s, the second largest 527 in the nation is the Republican Governors Association. Bush benefited from 527s in South Carolina against McCain in the 2000 primary. And the move-on ads, for the most part, are based on credible evidence. I mean, I'm not here to defend move-on or not defend move-on, but move-on's ads are factually based. The Swift Boat ads are not factually based, at least in terms of the records and the eyewitnesses. So to equate these two things is ridiculous. And Bush talks about these shadowy groups, which is a clever ploy to take the focus off of the Swift Boat veterans and sort of damn by association move-on. But the fact of the matter is it's not a valid comparison. The media's really dropped the ball in making that clear.
I think they're confusing two issues. One is the issue of the 527 groups, a legitimate but separate story, and the other is the issue of the credibility of actors in stories. It seems to me, back to the issue of a double standard, that the media now are saying that they just want to report sort of what one side says and what the other side says and sort of monitor the flow of the give and take of this story. They didn't always feel like that. In 2000, they weren't reluctant at all to say that Al Gore had a record of sort of stretching the truth. They'd say he said he was the creator of the internet, even though he never said that. So they haven't always avoided declaring the statements by candidates factual or not, have they?
Absolutely not. And this is something that I've always found fascinating, sort of difficult to explain. I mean, from my perspective, it seems as though the media in general is a lot harder on Democratic candidates, despite the fact that as a number of studies have shown, including a recent Pew study, they tend to identify themselves more often as liberal than conservative.
Finally, I want to read a comment from a senior editor at National Public Radio. This was in a column where they were responding to critics who say that this issue, the Swift Boat veterans, have been given too much attention. Here's what he said, quote, "There is no way that journalism can satisfy those who think that Kerry is a liar or that Swift Boat veterans for truth are liars," close quote. What do you make of that kind of response?
Well, to some degree, it's true. I mean, there's going to be people out there who, no matter what, are determined to believe what they are predisposed to believe. But that doesn't mean journalism can't do its job better than it's doing. You can't get everyone, but you can certainly get some people, and you can get more people than we're getting now. Journalism's job is to get the truth to the people. I mean, maybe the ultimate goal is, as some press critics have said, is obviously to make money. But within that function, you can do a good job, and I'd like to think that if you those two things can go hand in hand. I mean, there's something to be said for credibility. The media on the Swift Boat things, I think, has forfeited a lot of credibility, and it needs to work hard to get it back. The New York Times, the Washington Post have started to do what they've needed to do, but it came 2 months too late, and we're still getting a lot of these same, this 527 issue, a lot of confusion, and the people need to know what is true and what it's not. And to have two talking heads debating the issues with no context and with no facts is not the way we should be doing journalism.
We've been speaking with Brian Montopoli. He's a reporter for Campaign Desk, a project of the Columbia Journalism Review. You can follow their coverage of campaign coverage at www.campaigndesk.org. Brian Montopoli, thanks for joining us this week here on Counterspin.
Thanks very much.
We've spent a lot of time on this show talking about how our commercial media and its corporate sponsors don't much care for presenting dissenting views. For instance, in the run-up to the Iraq War, the networks failed to provide a debate, virtually disappearing the anti-war movement. And even now, when polls are reporting that a majority of Americans think the Iraq War was a mistake, it's hard to find prominent pundits who will speak ill of it. For those concerned about corporate media hostility to free speech, the story of Kyle Johnson won't provide much comfort. Johnson is the communications director for the Interhemispheric Resource Center in Silver City, New Mexico, whose weekly radio show, Radio Free Silver, on station KNFT, was recently canceled. Johnson joins us now by phone with the rest of the story. Kyle Johnson, thanks for joining us on Counterspin.
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me.
Just to set up your story, you had a one-hour daily radio show on a station that carries 7 hours a day of Rush Limbaugh, Michael Savage, and Bill O'Reilly, all right-wing radio hosts. Take the story from there for us.
The show began on May 19th. I'd had a prior relationship with Matt Runnels, who is the owner of the station. I had been previously the general manager of CATS, which is Community Access Television of Silver. So when I approached him about the idea for Radio Free Silver, he already knew and understood, you know, kind of where I was coming from, and said, great. And I was actually asking for a one-day-a-week program. And he said, no, I've got a slot here Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m. So that's how it began, and the fireworks started almost immediately after that.
So tell us about when the show started, when you took to air, what happened?
Well, the show began, as I said, in mid-May, and it had a variety of topics. It was not just politically oriented things, although I can tell you succinctly, just again, so you know where I'm coming from, I consider George Bush to be a thug and a thief. But actually, the show covered many, many different topics. The first show was on the New Mexico Peace Initiative, which is modeled after Dennis Kucinich's idea for a national cabinet-level Secretary of Peace, the Peace Department. But we talked about quality of life issues. We have a local issue here with mosquitoes and the West Nile virus. We talked about wolf recovery. We talked about domestic violence. We talked about no more deaths and people trying to cross the border. We talked about local burns in national forests. You know, complete variety of topics. And, of course, each show featured a guest. So it was not only me that was silenced, ultimately, but these approximately 40 people that appeared that were mostly local folks who were making their viewpoints known.
Well, tell us how Radio Free Silver finally came to be silenced on KNFT.
Well, as I said, the fireworks began almost immediately that I was getting some feedback that certain advertisers and general, you know, listeners were calling up and were hostile toward the program. Now, almost none of these people would ever speak to me directly. They did not want to talk about issues. They did not want to talk about the content of the program or the ideas that were conveyed. They simply wanted the program to go away. So over a period of time, I would hear some of this, but I was essentially shielded from a lot of that. I was aware that these calls were coming in. But since very few of them actually wanted to speak to me, I didn't have occasion to speak to most of these folks. But over time, after a few weeks into the program, all of a sudden I didn't have any advertisements during the show. I only had PSAs during the breaks. So when I talked to Matt about this, he said, yeah, everybody's pulled the ads, and I don't know if I can continue with the show with it not having any financial backing. You know, and basically what they had done is move their ads to other programs. At that point, I said, well, what if I come up with my own advertisers? And I was thinking, I don't really want to do that because it's like I can see what's coming up with, you know, the storm that's brewing here, and it's essentially a boycott situation. So for me to go to a business would be essentially to say, hey, would you put your neck on the block here in this very small community where you can be identified as someone that these people can target for further economic action? So instead, I went to a listener support model and circulated through our local email lists and on the air and said, basically, the show is about to be canceled. If this is something that you value, please support the show and pledge to support it because we need to replace the revenues that were otherwise provided by the advertisers. So I had the pledges the next day. So within 24 hours, we had not only the pledges to keep the show on, but commitments to contribute on a monthly basis to maintain the program. But subsequently, on the 19th, is when Matt Runnels came in and made the fateful announcement that essentially a gun had been placed to his head, figuratively speaking. As he described it, economic terrorism had occurred, and the advertisers had threatened to pull the advertising, totaling about $10,000 a month, not only from the AM station, which is the one that also hosts the, you know, reactionary right-wing talk shows, but also from the FM station, which is strictly country music, right? So I've never been on the FM station. There is no talk radio on the FM station. So they threatened to pull the plug on both of them. And at the time that Matt came on the show and made that public announcement, he described some of the types of businesses. He didn't name particular businesses, but he said, I've gotten it from the banks, I've gotten it from the car dealers, I've gotten it from the pizza parlors, I've gotten it from the ATV dealers. So that creates a very short list, you know, of who might have been involved right there.
Kyle Johnson, what's the lesson that you take from this? One, and this story's not quite over yet. Tell us about that, too.
No, it's not over. The lesson is to fight back. And that's what we're doing. We're forming a group, which is an action committee, and we're trying to seek broad consensus of of folks here in Silver City and Grant County. It's called CAFE, Citizen Advocates for Fairness and Equality. And to read briefly, the mission is to protect and assert our rights of free expression as citizens, to support access to the full range of information and opinion, to encourage respect for culture, diversity, and human rights, to promote economic and social justice, and to advance the cause of peace and methods of nonviolence through community dialogue and the free exercise of our rights under the First Amendment. So this marks our next stage. Silver City is an historic place. It's the site of the Empire Mine Strike of the early 50s that was the subject of the film Salt of the Earth. It shows the struggle against corporate interests and, you know, subjugating a minority, basically that kind of exploitation. So we have a history of that here, and this is part of an old boy network that has been able to get away with a lot of stuff over a number of years. We may not be able to convince them with our argument, but we will not allow them to censor us or silence us. And in fact, Radio Free Silverman will not be silenced because it is about to be resurrected as a public access television program on CATS, Community Access Television at Silver, which is a protected First Amendment venue.
We've been speaking with Kyle Johnson, the once and future host of Radio Free Silver in Silver City, New Mexico. He's also the communications director for the Interhemispheric Resource Center. Kyle Johnson, thanks for joining us today on Counterspin.
Thank you very much for having me.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by the staff and interns at the Media Watch group FAIR, based in New York. FAIR also publishes a bimonthly magazine called Extra. For subscription information, you can call the following toll-free number, 1-800-847-3993. That's 1-800-847-3993. Be sure to tell them you heard about Extra here on Counterspin. If you missed part of today's show or would like to hear other Counterspin broadcasts, you can do that at FAIR's website at www.fair.org. And while you're at FAIR's website, you can sign up for FAIR's Action Alert Network. Again, that address is www.fair.org. This show is engineered by Kelly Spivey at Mercer Media and co-hosted by Peter Hart. I'm Steve Rendell. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.